Megan just wanted you to know what you've been missing with Lean Cuisine. 8 entrees you only get from Light and Elegant. The choice is yours.
I'm feeling bad. Gary got some cash. Linda got some cash. You missed a $700 sales surprise.
I'm walking.
The music and memoirs of Fats Domino and others will draw thousands of tourists to the Hall of Fame in one of 8 cities. Chicago is hoping to beat the rest, even though the city's Nick Rapkin admits he'll be competing with a $35 million package offered by Cleveland. He thinks Chicago can offer something even better.
We're larger. We're already an internationally recognized cultural center. We've got a much more legitimate connection to rock and roll history and tradition than Cleveland has got.
And Rapkin says Hall of Fame founders apparently agree because they haven't yet jumped at Cleveland's generous offer. Mark Chalperin, Q101 News. Navy Pier would be the home of a national rock and roll Hall of Fame, by one scenario from a local committee trying to lure the Hall of Fame here. The city's Nick Rapkin says it's a natural.
What more magnificent sight could they imagine for a rock and roll Hall of Fame than out on our lake? The city's making a commitment already to the development of Navy Pier for recreation and cultural activities. A Rock and Roll Hall of Fame seems to me to fit.
The catch? Hall of Fame organizers have asked for a new building as part of a $40 million package from any one of 8 cities under consideration. But Rapkin says once they see the pier, they may well change their minds. Marge Halperin, Q101 News. The Hall of Fame will include a state-of-the-art recording studio, an intimate concert hall, and archives of tapes and memoirs from the biggest names in rock and roll. It's no wonder Chicago wants it.
What does rock and roll mean to half of the American population? I think it means a lot. And the result will be a very, very significant tourist attraction that'll bring hundreds of thousands of people.
The drawback, says the city's Nick Rapkin, is that organizers want the city to put up cash, land, and tax breaks. And though Cleveland has offered a $35 million package, Rapkin predicts the Hall of Fame will choose a more prestigious home at any price. Marge Halperin, Q101 News.
They're riding on top of a bus, waving at the fans, trying to keep warm up there. It's a slow parade, but a short one. There's a marching band, but they couldn't play any tunes because they were sticking to their instruments when they tried to wet their lips and play. There's also a bus of team officials who are carrying the Super Bowl trophy and displaying it in their front window. And other than that, a lot of cold people milling around, hanging onto the edges of the buses, mobbing their way happily down to Daly Plaza, now renamed Bears Plaza, where they'll have a short and cold rally. On LaSalle Street, Marge Halperin, Q101 News.
They waited as long as 3 hours for the Bears, mobbing LaSalle Street and straining for a glimpse of their heroes.
It's the greatest. In 20 years, we've been waiting for this.
My toes are frostbit, but it's worth it.
What are you doing to keep yourselves warm here?
Dancing. Jumping
doing
around.
The Super Bowl shuffle. Yeah.
We are the Bears, shuffling the crew, shuffling on down, doing it for you. We're so bad, we know we're good. Blowing your minds like we knew we would.
And that keeps you warm.
Yeah. Go Bears.
When the team bus finally rolled down LaSalle Street, everyone seemed to forget their frozen toes. The crowd swamped the bus, plowing through shin-deep ticker tape, cheering and barking, making their way to the Daly Plaza rally, where they could really cut loose in celebration. Marge Halperin, Q101 News. Winfrey says she's jumping over the moon, still having trouble believing her very first movie role won her a nomination. She rates her chances of winning an Oscar as perhaps a bit worse than 1 out of 5, worried that she and fellow Purple actress Margaret Avery will split votes from fans of their movie. But win or lose, Oprah is delighted with the nomination.
Yippity-doo-dah-day is what I say. I mean, first of all, there hasn't been a black woman to win an Oscar since Hattie McDaniel for Gone with the Wind. So the fact that we were both nominated in the same category is nothing short of a miracle.
Winfrey says she'll definitely go to the award ceremony and is already shopping for a dress. Marge Halperin, Q101 News. Ronald Reagan may be the Teflon president, but big city mayors are made of Velcro, Washington says, predicting the effects of Reagan's budget cuts will stick with us for a long time.
The effects could hardly be worse if we were attacked by a foreign enemy. That is why it seems to us that Ronald Reagan has clearly declared war on the city of Chicago.
One congressman suggests Chicago declare war on Reagan, then surrender, qualifying for more aid than the city is likely to get under the new federal budget. Marge Halperin, Q101 News. All they had to do was lip sync the record they've already recorded, but that's harder than it looks.
Take it back to It Takes Love.
Okay, ready audio.
Is it Danny?
It took 4 hours to film the 5.5-minute video, about average for a project like this, according to director Carmine Torbetta.
Actually, I've had professional actors on camera that have done more takes than they did. I think that they did an excellent job. I wanted to keep them as natural as possible, but I think they actually were pretty good.
Walter Payton says he's only in it for fun, and starting a new career as a singing star is fun. Marge Halperin, Q101 News.
Okay, ready audio.
Is it Danny?
It took 4 hours to film the 5.5-minute video, but Walter Payton says the song's message was worth it.
Work together regardless of what it is, who you're working with. The only way you're going to get it accomplished is you put all grievances aside, all prejudices aside, and just work together as one.
As he sweated through one take after another, Payton was assured that even the pros find this tedious work. And when it was over, he boasted, "I could have done it in one take," but didn't want to make the other guys look bad. Marge Halperin, Q101 News.
Cue it back to the top.
It isn't a very romantic ceremony, just a quickie to make it legal. But none of the couples are complaining, especially not on this, the most romantic day of the year.
Valentine's Day has a special meaning to me, and I just wanted this day to be a lasting memory for both of us.
Clarence Ford has always been a romantic guy, according to his new wife, Marilyn.
Oh, he brings me flowers, and he calls me up at work just to tell me he loves me.
So whose romantic idea was it to get married today?
His mother's.
Okay, now we know who the romantic is in the family.
Marge Halperin, Q101 News.
Do you take this woman to be your lawfully?
Couples are lined up into the hallway, planning to make this lover's holiday even more special.
Why did you pick today to get married?
Because I'm a romantic. And so is he.
Surprisingly, most judges don't like marriage court, but Judge Charles Alfano volunteered to work today.
This is one of the most pleasant experiences a judge can have in the course of his duties. People come in laughing, people go out laughing.
And the judge says this is one day when he can be sure none of his work will be overturned by an appellate judge. Marge Halperin, Q101 News. Kids of all ages are slipping into the recording booths at Soundtracks in the Stratford Square Mall.
They sing in the shower, they sing in the car, they sing clean the house. They just want to come here and see how they sound.
Engineer Chris Mitchell says the most popular of the 149 songs he'll help you record are Madonna tunes and the Super Bowl Shuffle. He's had groups of nearly a dozen people cram into the booth searching more for fun than for stardom. Marge Halperin, Q101 News. Jamie Guansey isn't really trying to knock Madonna off the charts. She just wants a tape to help get work as a singer at weddings. So for $10, she recorded this song at Soundtracks, a quickie recording studio at Stratford Square in Bloomingdale. Engineer Chris Mitchell says not everyone who comes in is so serious about their singing.
We've had a 6-year-old boy come in and do a song that he didn't even know the words to. And we've had old people come in. And I think our biggest age group is the teenage girl.
There are 149 songs to choose from, but Mitchell says Madonna's tunes are by far the most popular. Marge Halperin, Q101 News. You can choose one of 149 songs, from country to pop, contemporary Christian to Eddie Murphy. You sing along with background vocals and a helping voice that disappears on tape, so only your own crisp notes come through. Nervous? You're not the only one.
A lot of people, you can hear them, they're shaking. But with the practice, they get used to it and they get less nervous and they realize that they are having fun. And when they hear the tape, they know they're having fun.
At Soundtracks in the Stratford Square Mall, engineer Chris Mitchell says nearly everyone leaves the booth happy. A bit embarrassed, perhaps, but happy. Marge Halperin, Q101 News.
Oh, boy.
Elaine Stenstrom gave up her job as an elementary school librarian to go to nanny school, ending up as part of Lisa Greenspan's Highland Park family.
She is an employee, yes, if you want to look at the technical side of it, but we enjoy her company. We like when the kids are to bed that we can really just talk and laugh and collapse and cry or do whatever we have to do, and we do it together.
With the right nanny in the right home, everybody wins. Parents get a helping hand, the nanny gets an instant family, and the kids get a new role model.
We have been noticing that the children are running around the house going, "Dadgummit."
March Halperin, Q101 News.
I want four of the best box seats for opening day.
The temperature was in the teens when the box office opened at 9 this morning, but few of the hundreds of Cub fans waiting in line seemed to care. And they didn't seem too worried about the Cubs' prospects for the 1986 season.
It really doesn't matter how well they do, I just come out to see the Cubs play.
But with the next breath, a true Cubs fan will spout true optimism.
Bears did, didn't they? Cubbies are going to do the same.
You're the bear. Little Cub, big bear.
They just got to keep healthy.
Can't do any worse.
And so another season is about to begin. March Halperin, Q101 News.
Take me out.
This is what they mean by diehard Cub fans. Some were lined up at Wrigley Field as early as 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, camping out in sleeping bags and on lounge chairs.
Makes it a lot more comfortable. Feels like I'm out in the bleachers catching some sun.
Does it really feel like that?
Sure, you just need a few old styles in you and everything feels great.
Others relied on layers of clothes and some warmth from within to make it through the cold.
Coffee till 7, Irish coffee till 9.
And they all left with dreams of a sunny April 18th, opening day against the Pittsburgh Pirates. March Halperin, Q101 News.
Happy birthday, Chicago.
Happy birthday, Chicago.
It was an old-fashioned party, complete with a cake covered with the city skyline, colorful balloons, and a rousing chorus.
A one, a two, you know what to do. Happy birthday.
Mayor Washington promises next year's 150th birthday party will be a real zinger. And since it comes right after the mayoral election, Washington's already decided on the present he'd like to give the city.
Me.
To you.
March Halperin, Q101 News. Learning to juggle is as easy as learning to walk, according to a man who's taught more than 200,000 people how to toss one ball in the air behind another. Mike Vondruska runs the Illinois Juggling Institute in suburban Bensonville, teaching juggling at area schools and colleges. He says kids can learn the basics in less than an hour, but adults are often slower to catch on.
Sometimes adults get inhibited if there are other adults around. They say, well, I'll practice it later on. We're kids, you know, they're more willing to try things.
To make it as easy as possible, Vondruska starts kids of all ages with lightweight nylon scarves.
People are used to using tennis balls or golf balls or something like that. And you drop it once or twice and you get discouraged and say, forget it. But with scarves, they float so slow that you have a lot of time. And you can see the pattern clearly and you pick it up. And after you learned it, then you're more willing to try something that, like a round object that'll fall faster. Right, left, right, left, right, left, and one way.
And from there, something just clicks, and you're on your way to a sport even the non-athletic type can master easily.
If they were to learn a musical instrument, it would take a long time and so forth. But with juggling, you have that instant success. So hopefully, maybe the kid that hasn't been successful in too many other things can go home, show mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, all their friends, and they'll say, wow, look at Johnny. Johnny's doing great.
And for adults, it's a great way to relax.
Bell Laboratories out in Naperville, they have a juggling group. And at lunchtime, they get together and they juggle. And they say it's real relaxing. In fact, I've run across executives who, instead of taking caffeine and nicotine breaks, they take juggling breaks.
But it's hard to believe anyone is relaxing when they're juggling some wild combinations.
Well, I have a friend who juggles a Casio keyboard. He juggled a Casio board, a torch, and an apple. I mean, I do a tennis racket, a plunger, and a bowling pin on a unicycle.
And even when Vandruska is juggling more conventional clubs, he's working hard.
You start to do double spins or double flips, which look real nice. Triple flips. A flash of three, and so forth. And you do crazy things, shoot them on your head. Ooh, ouch.
You can find Vandruska at the Illinois Juggling Institute in Bensonville.
And the big finish. Ta-da!
I'm Merch Halperin on the Chicago Beat. Be Lake Wobegon's official marching band. Its 20 members make their grand entrance looking as unusual as they sound. They wear thrift store gowns and suits, wild mini pearl style hats, and carry their instruments proudly. The shiny brown bottles are glued together in sets of four, and the players' heads bob from one to another, with each bottle tuned to a different note.
76 Bud Lights led the big parade, with 110 RCs right behind. They were followed by rows and rows of sangrias, curds, and straws. There were jugs of every shape and size.
The secret is in the tuning, according to bandleader Paul Phillips. It's his job to fill each bottle with water, using a turkey baster to get exactly the right pitch. Then he stops them with a cork until showtime.
The tuning is crucial, and in fact, that's the hardest part of the whole thing, is to get everybody to play just right. So we have to tune each person to each bottle. So once we get it right, we want it to stay there. That's why we stop them up.
Not just any bottle will do, of course. Airline-sized liquor bottles hit the high notes. Wine jugs are the bass bottles. And the official bottle of the bottle band is a Budweiser long neck.
Because it gets the best sound. We've experimented with many other types of beer bottles, but we find that gets the nicest sound.
Why do you think that is?
It depends on the structure of the bottle. If you ever happen to blow different bottles, you'll find that they do have different characteristics. And some really reverberate a lot, and some are real hard to play. I will browse and look and see what looks interesting to play, you know, and I would perhaps buy it for its musical value rather than what's inside of it.
Do you throw out what's inside?
No, no, okay. Of course not.
We are the women who empty out all of the bottles for the bottle band. It's a thankless job, but somebody's got to do it. And not only do we empty out the bottles, but we test them as well.
The star of the show is singer and principal kazooist, Kyle Cartwright.
I've got my degree in vocal with a choral emphasis from Western University.
Right.
I don't use anything I've learned in this particularly, but it's nice to know that my mother's pleased when I get up and do musical things. You know what I mean?
What do you mean you're not going to use your degree?
Even those members without a musical background find it doesn't take long to learn how to play the bottles. As Lauren Bacall once said, you just put your lips together and blow.
Some of us are better at puckering than others, I guess. I played bottles my first year and then graduated to principal kazoo. And I'm glad, because I almost fainted several times during that first year. I admire especially the bass bottle players, because they really have to have a lot of wind.
Did it take you very long to learn how to do this?
It does at first. You really have to learn how to, you know, maneuver your face over this thing.
It's like a flute, because you really have to pucker.
As lovely as these bottles sound alone, they aren't enough. The band also relies on a pile of party noisemakers.
Like this, and, you know, Favor and Donald Duck. And we also hit the bottles. We have ones like that. See, we kind of pay homage to Spike Jones. He was one of my boyhood heroes.
Put it all together and you have a sound that makes this a sellout show year after year.
I live alive, the sound of
For National Public Radio, I'm Marge Halperin in Chicago. Crocs and Brentano's is the country's fifth largest bookseller and a Chicago tradition since 1907. Founder Adolph Croc built a European-style business with an emphasis on personal service. As was the custom, he passed the business along to his son Carl some 25 years ago, and the tradition continued. But Carl is now 72. He and his wife have no children and are about to do something very untraditional, sell the 17-store empire to their employees. Marge Halperin has a report. As you walk down Wabash Avenue in Chicago's busy loop, you'll pass the big-name bookstores, B. Dalton, Walden Books, and Crown, before coming to Crocs and Brentano's. Thousands of people do just that, pass up the others, in favor of Crocs' huge selection. The store stocks 125,000 titles and places ads in trade publications around the world on behalf of customers who are searching for out-of-print books. That kind of personal service is part of the definition of Carl Croc's full-service bookstore. It's a phrase Croc takes so seriously that he registered it with the U.S. Patent Office. He backs it up with a staff trained to help glassy-eyed customers sort through the massive selection.
If you would come into one of the chain or discount stores and ask for a book of calligraphy, just to take an example, the salesperson in that store might ask you what calligraphy is. Here we will have 100 books on calligraphy.
Croc encourages his staff to make friends with the customers, to help match them with books they'll enjoy. Children's book manager Laura McVeigh typifies Croc's dedication to his customers.
Our customer says, well, I don't know the title, but maybe you've heard of this, and maybe if you can think of it right, then it can be frustrating, but in the long run, it's very satisfying to say, oh, yes, I know that book.
McVeigh's enthusiasm spreads to her customers. They use her department as if it were their own reading room.
Other bears had no trouble going into caves to sleep. Griswold always got stuck. He had to sleep out in the open, but he didn't mind. He had a nice coat of fur to keep him warm.
We're from Montana, and we're traveling through Chicago, and when we stop, we come in here.
And you're just reading some books here to your dog?
Yeah.
So it's like a tourist stop for you?
Yeah, yeah. Crocs is just one of them in Chicago that I've always gone to since I was little.
Over the years, Carl Croc has heard hundreds of similar stories. The highlights are in a guest book that includes rave reviews from prominent visitors, like President Truman, who stopped by one morning before the store opened.
Well, one of our salesperson invited Mr. Truman in and took him around the store. And I have his autograph here, and he said, thanks for a good show.
That show has changed little over the decades, though the book business has. Bargain books are the trend now, led by the cut-rate Crown stores. But Croc says he's watched discounters come and go over the years and has no intention of changing his stores to keep up with what he says is the latest marketing fad.
Because the salespeople, if you can find one, are not helpful in selection of books. I wish we could meet the price of those stores, but it's impossible for us to carry the tremendous inventory we carry and to have intelligent sales personnel.
Croc has learned something from the national chains, though. He admits they do offer their own form of service, bringing books to communities that never had bookstores before. So, like the big chains, Croc now has several stores in suburban shopping malls. But Croc's refusal to bend to other trends has paid off. Despite increased competition, his profits have grown every year for the past 50 years. Saleswoman Laura McVeigh says you can see why when you walk through Croc's stores.
I've never been in a place that's so busy. You're either filling out orders for things that we don't have, or you're answering a customer request, or going up to the stock room to get things. We have a very large stock area. Did you see that?
No.
The stock rooms are immense. It's like the mom and pop kind of store, only a little bit bigger. A lot bigger.
Employees like McVeigh can now choose to buy stock and become owners of Crocs and Brentanos, something Carl Croc hopes will give them a stake in keeping his tradition alive. But as a safeguard, Croc has placed at the helm newly named president Bill McCarthy. McCarthy started at Crocs 34 years ago and recites the company philosophy as glibly as does Croc himself, so the store isn't likely to change much under its new owners. Instead, McCarthy says the reorganization is designed to thank Croc's dedicated workers.
We turn up salespeople who are overly qualified in a sense, and I think one of the great opportunities that we have here with this becoming an employee-owned company is to give them more financial incentive than we've been able to give in the past, and that's part of Mr. Croc's feeling about it, and certainly it's part of my feeling about it. We'll let you know in some years how successful that's been.
And the employees welcome the plan.
I think it shows that Mr. Croc is really interested in the employees. It's not just lip service. I feel that he's looking out for our best interests.
The employees appreciate the fact that, they have some say now in the company as far as what goes on.
But Carl Croc isn't letting go completely. The terms of the sale allow him to keep an eye on the employee-run business.
That was one of the advantages. I had a very attractive offer to sell the business, but it would have meant complete retirement, and I don't think that I could ever be completely retired. I'd like to stay here, have my office, have contact with books and with people as long as my health is good.
And so when the buyout has been fully phased in 5 years from now, Croc will visit his office as he pleases, browsing through his personal library of some 1,500 cookbooks. It's a collection he's built up over the years, but has never had time to fully enjoy. I'm Marge Halperin for National Public Radio in Chicago. The sound of the shofar, the traditional ram's horn trumpet, will call Jews to worship tonight at special Jewish New Year services around the world. This is a time to reflect on the past year, to repent for sins of the year, and to make resolutions for a better year to come. Hundreds of youngsters in the Chicago area will be paying special attention to that ram's horn trumpet because they have had the rare opportunity to see how a shofar is made. Marge Halperin takes us on a tour of the only shofar factory in the United States, operated in Glencoe, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago.
They are blowing shofar. What does the shofar say?
This is not so much a factory as it is a classroom. Rabbi Yosef Shanowitz wants to make Jewish holidays come alive for children. So for the past 2 years, he has run a successful matzah factory at Passover time, teaching children how that unleavened holiday bread is made. And this year, he decided to tackle Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year that traditionally is an adult-oriented holiday. To make the occasion more meaningful for children, Rabbi Shanowitz is focusing on the shofar, the trumpet that never fails to attract children's attention at the solemn and lengthy New Year's service.
Sounds are very meaningful to children. Children at a very early age can identify a shofar and its sounds. And what I was trying to do is trying to show the children, give them a better understanding of how the shofar is made. And I think it makes it more real for them and enhances their understanding and appreciation and joy.
And it works. More than 2,000 children from all over Illinois and neighboring Indiana have come to the rabbi's factory, listening to the plaintive holiday music and eagerly watching the hissing pressure cooker that is the focal point of the factory. After explaining that shofars can only be made from the horns of a kosher animal, preferably the ram, the rabbi dons asbestos gloves and reaches into the steaming pot to pull out a gracefully curved horn.
This is a raw horn that has just been cooked. Now, do you think we can blow with this horn?
No, it's too hot.
It's too hot. Suppose it was cool.
Yeah, no, it's not hot enough.
As you can see, the horn is not empty. It's filled with cartilage, marrow, a bone.
There is a chorus of oohs, ahs, and groans as he uses a long wire hook to reach inside the horn and pull out the mass of cartilage and marrow that's inside. Once the horn is hollow, Shanowitz saws off the tip. Then he puts the horn to his lips, though it's still damp and gray, looking to the children's dismay much like a chicken neck pulled from a pot of soup. But it sounds the notes so familiar to Jews, the sobbing sound that calls them to worship.
have just learned the art of making a shofar. And I wish, I hope all of you, when you grow up, you will become shofar makers.
That seems like a good idea to most of the kids, though some of them just can't forget the image of that freshly cooked horn.
Would you like to make your own someday?
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Why not?
Because it's too messy.
While the rabbi polishes the horn, the children roam around the room, looking at stuffed specimens of the animals that sacrifice their horns to this Jewish tradition. Then they're awarded a shofar-shaped cookie and sent home to share the shofar story with others. It is a more successful program than the rabbi had envisioned, and he plans to reopen his factory next year with only one minor change.
We had a sign in front of the building saying shofar factory parking with an arrow. I did acquire with the city before, the city of Glencoe, but one of the neighbors, I guess, was annoyed. She said that she didn't move to Glencoe to live behind a factory. So that was sort of funny. I don't think she understood. She really understood what this factory was all about.
This is not a factory kind of neighborhood, is it?
No, it certainly isn't. Not in Glencoe. Glencoe is a nice suburban, beautiful area.
So the parking sign will be missing next year, but another will stay tacked to the factory door, reading, "This Rosh Hashanah, will your child think a shofar is someone who drives a limousine? They won't after visiting this unique shofar factory." I'm Marge Halperin for National Public Radio in Glencoe, Illinois. Take a tour of Regent's Park's Twin Towers, and you'll see right away why it's a popular place to live. For rents ranging from $500 to $900 a month, the mostly yuppie professional residents get access to this health club, complete with a lush atrium and a 16-foot waterfall. Another draw is the gourmet grocery store and its full-time butcher. All of those amenities have made Regent's Park popular over the years, but it's grown in popularity because of a new artist-in-residence program. Each year, the developers choose a budding artist to live in Regent's Park with free room and board, studying his or her art form and sharing it with other residents. This year, it's dancer and dance teacher Ron DeJesus. A three-time high school dropout, DeJesus has been transformed into a professional dancer while at Regent's Park.
One and two, three, four. Come on, lift these centers.
Prior to the grant, I was like working as a janitor in a dance studio just so I would stay in my environment of dance. I was a part-time dancer. And whereas now, I dance from the moment I wake up, 9 o'clock, to the moment I go to bed, 10 o'clock. And that's basically how a dancer's life should be.
At the end of his year's grant, 24-year-old DeJesus will move into a job with Chicago's prestigious Hubbard Street Dance Company. He turned down offers from the Milwaukee Ballet and from several local colleges that wanted him to teach. The year has also been rewarding for Regent's Park's other residents.
Ron has taught master classes in the building. Ron has accompanied us to dance performances. Ron has set up many performances of local companies in the building. We've had a chance to see them and meet with them. A very special evening was to bring Ruth Page, who's one of the grand dames of dancers in Chicago, to our building. with slides from her long career from the 30s and from the 40s, and it was just really an excellent and outstanding experience.
Maria Bayless is one of many residents who took advantage of DeJesus' crash course in dance. She says it's the main reason she and her husband will not consider moving out of Regent's Park.
This particular program is just, it's singular. I mean, I know of no other place that has anything like this. It makes people aware that there are interesting, intelligent adults in the building. And it gives them a way to come together and a way to relate and a way to continue to learn. It's all, you know, it's almost like an adult education program in a sense.
While the program is also credited with making Regent's Park so popular that there are waiting lists for most department models, manager Tim Allward says he's not in the art business to make money.
The purpose of the program really is to enrich the artistic community by really developing followers of the different art form. The payback really is the residents and the interaction and the excitement of experiencing an art form.
To an artist, this is like a dream come true, allowing you to devote and give your deepest gesture of gratitude toward your passion, your love, and your dream, which is your art, and share it with others. You know, so I think it's just magnificent what the building has done.
Dancer Rhonda Jesus. The only thing wrong with this program, DeJesus says, is that it has yet to spread to other apartment buildings. For National Public Radio, I'm Marge Halperin in Chicago.
Three, four, five, six. Left side.